goes to the Department of Education.
Blame the staff.
It is distributed to school districts. They have applied for it.
He's on.
With a 50%.
Welcome, everybody, to the first meeting of the Joint Committee on Transportation. I guess it's the first session meeting of it. It is, for the record, February 7th, 2018. Just a little bit of background, and I hope the committee will agree with this. We spent a lot of time over the interim, particularly at the last meeting, going through the 4059, which is the technical fix bill, and 4060, which is a mix of things. The co-chair's suggestion is that we deal with 4059 tonight, which I think, unless you've seen a lot of things, we at the last meeting we generally agreed that it was okie dokie, that didn't need a lot, but we'll do a public hearing on that. And if you agree to that, then we will move on to deal with three things tonight. And I should say, I figure that we got 3 to 4 weeks when we can work through this. The goal is to try to put everything into one bill, which would be 4059, if that is agreeable to the committee, to work towards that. General process, like we did with 2017 last time, as we work through these issues, we'll try to see if we can come to consensus by section on things. That doesn't commit you to the final thing, but we're trying to get to that so that we can give direction to staff to prepare the final amendment, and we'll end up with an amendment at the end and one bill to vote on. Generally, is that an acceptable process to folks?
Question on the left.
Senator Monroe.
Everybody all right?
You're thumbing up. Okay, well, Patrick tells me we can't have thumbs up, so.
I'm just saying they're not binding,
no
Mr. Chair.
We have no binding votes.
They're so. Non-binding thumbs, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I nominate Representative Olson to go out there and make people answer questions.
And for the audience, just so you know, if you come to testify, we'll open it up at the start here on 40.
Oh, why don't we do this first?
I'm going to do that. Okay. I'm just telling the process.
Okay.
On 4059, the technical piece, we want to get that out of the way. If you want to testify on that, we'll give you an opportunity. Then after we're done with that, we're going to deal with three subject areas. Accountability, which is sections 1 through 4 in the in 4060. Highway revenue and projection of allocations, which is sections 6 to 17, and jurisdictional transfers, which is 25 to 28. And what I'll do is when we get to those sections, I'll give you a chance to comment before we get into the discussion on each one. So with that, committee, if that process is okay, the first thing we have to do is adopt committee rules. So if I can have a motion to adopt the committee rules, then I guess I should ask you, committee rules, is there anything special about them, Patrick?
They were provided today by the chief clerk, and they're the rules that all joint committees that are not
standard
budget
rules.
Committees use. Yes, Mr.
Chair. I move adoption of the committee rules.
Representative has moved the adoption of the committee rules as presented, the standards. Do we need to talk about those? Is there any objections to the adoption of the rules? Seeing none, the rules are adopted. We should start out with introduction of committee members, and I'll start down here.
Well, my name is Susan McLean, and I'm the representative from House District 29.
My name is John Lively. I'm a representative from House District 12, Springfield.
Andy Olson, Albany.
Patty McEwen, House District 9, Coos Beatty, Yahats.
And Lee Byers, Senator from District 6, which is Central Linn and Lane Counties.
Brian Belquist, rural portions of Willamette Valley.
Betsy Johnson, District 16, Northwest Oregon.
Didn't know you moved.
I didn't either.
You just adopted another one.
I'm Rod Monroe, District 24, which is Mid Multnomah County and Northern Clackamas County.
And I'm Rich Vile, House District 26, Shoals, Sherwood, South Hillsborough, down to the Willamette River in Wilsonville. I'm an interloper, not a member of the committee, but grateful to have the invitation to participate with you. Thank you.
All righty.
You know, we let him on the Senate side, not the House side.
We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4059. Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 4059 is what we're colloquially referring to as the technical fix bill related to House Bill 2017 from last session. The measure specifies, clarifies that the executive appointment of the director of the Department of Transportation is subject to Senate review and confirmation. It makes clarifications and technical corrections to several sections of House Bill 2017, which we can go over, but I suspect I don't want to steal the thunder of any of our people who are going to sign up to testify. And then this measure would take effect upon 91st day following adjournment. Sign it, Mr. Chair.
So. All righty. So we have two people signed up. Mike Elizon and Exxon Culver.
Co-Chair Beyer, Co-Chair McHugh, and members of the committee, Mike Elizon with the Association of Boards and Counties. I'm just speaking in support of a very simple but necessary fix in Section 6 and 7 of House Bill 4059. In the bill last session, House Bill 2017, there was a new $5 million program for, in essence, smaller counties, or I should say counties with large numbers of road miles but few registered vehicles. Larger counties agreed to forego or redistribute $5 million of new revenue to those counties. In essence, the bill contained a drafting error that flipped the numerator and denominator. So if left unchanged, it would have the sort of perverse result of rewarding or giving that money to more well-off counties. And so we just need to make that quick technical correction, and the formula will be as originally designed.
And help my memory, Mike. I think that's in the amended in 4059, is it, or do we
correct
need to make a change?
Yes, it's already in
it's
there.
Already
I just
in
wanted
there,
to explain so and put supporting it on the record that it's as it should be.
Okay, good. Yep. Any questions, Mike? CZ? Let's go.
Co-Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Exxon Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. One of the changes in House Bill 4059, it's specifically in Section 10 on page 10, the definition of taxable motor vehicle in sub B, so that would be Section 10, sub Section 5B, so it's the very top of. Mm-hmm. It indicates that a taxable vehicle has 7,500 miles or less on the odometer if it's equipped with an odometer, or 7,500 miles or less on public highway of use on public highways. The Department of Revenue is administering the vehicle privilege and use taxes for which this definition applies, and there isn't a measurement for knowing whether a vehicle has had 7,500 miles of use on public highways. So we would encourage a tweak to that piece. One possible fix would be to refer to vehicles without an odometer that have a manufacturer's certificate of origin or a manufacturer's statement of origin for determining the tax applicability. The what's a manufacturer's certificate of origin, or MCO, or the statement of origin, an MSO, are presented to DMV for the first time that a vehicle's ever been titled. So that will be an easy measurement for knowing whether the vehicle is subject to tax.
So you,
it's
the,
one option.
The term vehicle, are we talking about trailers?
Trailers.
Yes, the bill and the amendment include trailers in the definition of taxable vehicle.
Okay. And that, I was trying to recall, that's not in the bill, right?
Oh, I'm Mr. Chair, if you would please.
Senator Boulkos.
I am looking at the language of the bill, and despite not understanding half what she just said, the fact of the matter is the bill does say less of 7,500 miles, and I don't know how you would determine that. So we do have a problem. We just need to figure out what the definition is. I think what she said in layman terms is that the first time it's ever registered in Oregon.
The MCO or MSO would be presented the first time it's ever titled and registered in any state of location. That would be the measurement of a vehicle without any mileage on public highways.
Senator Johnson?
Okay, so you start at zero someplace. How do you calculate that far out and stop? And you, it's on the title that it's the first time that it's been titled. You assume that it's zero. how do you know where it has driven for those 7,500 miles?
Right. Coach Meyer, Senator Johnson, that is exactly the point that I'm trying to make, is there is no measurement for a vehicle without an odometer of how many miles it has traveled. An MCO or MSO would determine that it is a new vehicle that's never been titled or registered with a Department of Motor Vehicles in any state.
If you don't mind? I think what we're trying to get at here is we know what a new car is, has an odometer, it's under 7,500 miles. The registration of trailers does not involve an odometer.
I get that.
So we can't determine that where it is. So the first time you register it, you pay the registration fee, and then you're done.
That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
That's the piece I missed.
It's a replacement.
This is the replacement for a car with under 7,500 miles. A new trailer doesn't have an odometer, so you pay the title fee one time.
So it's King's X on all existing trailers.
Yes. New trailers.
It's only new trailers.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And Co-Chair, if I may, it would apply to any vehicle without an odometer that is in the definition of what a taxable motor vehicle is.
And I'm saying the privilege tax would be applied.
Privilege tax or vehicle use tax.
There you go. Okay.
Chair, just for clarification, what she's saying is lines 1 and 2, page 10, don't do it. Yeah. So
we have to change that and clarify that.
So we have to make note.
We've been corresponding a lot.
Right. Yes. So it's fixed.
Going with the suggestion that we would first time registered, that's what you're saying.
Then you pay.
One time. Is that agreeable to people?
One time.
I think we had this discussion
in general. I think that's good.
At the last meeting. Okay. I'm seeing heads nod. That's okay?
Affirmative.
Representative?
First time registered in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was made. What?
You could buy it out of state, but it still would be registered in Oregon.
Well, I was confused listening. Was it first time registered in Oregon or first time registered, period?
No, in Oregon.
So maybe
clarify. Buyer, Representative Vile. It's possible that a taxable vehicle could be first time registered in Oregon and have an unmeasurable over 7,500 miles when it doesn't have an odometer. I'm not sure that you would want to use the first time registered in Oregon as the determining factor. As I stated earlier, the manufacturer certificate of origin or manufacturer's statement of origin is included with the paperwork to Department of Motor Vehicles when it is at the very first time of title and registration with any DMV in the United States. So that is a determining factor of that taxable motor vehicle being new.
I'm just thinking of a trailer comes in that's got a 1986 manufacturing certificate on it. We're going to assume it's probably been registered somewhere else. We're going to still stick the new the Oregon registration on it for the first time when we registered here.
Co-Chair Beyer, Representative Vile, a manufacturer's certificate of origin or a statement of origin would not be included with the title work for one that has been titled and registered previously. So if they had titled it in Washington and then brought it to Oregon and titled it in Oregon, the certificate of origin is only presented to the Department of Motor Vehicles one time. It doesn't stay with the vehicle. It's turned into Department of Motor Vehicles and retained.
Okay, now I get it. Because there's no certificate of origin to use.
Correct.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Thanks. Sorry.
Sounds like it's a solution that works for DOR. Are we okay with that?
The enforcement.
Yeah. Yes. Good enough. We have a consensus on that, it appears.
Moving along.
Unless I hear otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is all I have signed up to testify on House Bill 4059. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on that?
Oh, sure, but
the committee.
I have questions.
Yes.
I was asking them first. We don't seem to have anybody else, so now, committee, do you have questions?
I have the cheat sheet for this side of the room to ask Patrick questions to make sure we get it all on the record.
There you go. Take them away.
So, Patrick, in 2059, in the original House bill, 2017, Section 85. I'm working off of your cheat sheet you handed out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you would turn to page 10.
Okay. Page 9, 10.
And Section 85 has report on Connect Oregon streamlining process. Right. Could you explain what that is in the new bill 4059 so members understand?
So this is sections 8 and 9 of this bill. So as you recall, when we met in January, the Department of Transportation was required by House Bill 2017 to present a report on its process for streamlining the Connect Oregon application and approval process. That bill was originally written, when House Bill 2017 was originally written, it was written that that report was to be provided no later than September 15th of 2017. The committee was created October 6th of 2017. So the purpose of these sections is to essentially retroactively go back and indicate that that report was given at the time that it was statutorily required to be given, because the original requirement was not meetable because the committee didn't exist at the time. So that's just going back and reaching back in time and saying that that report, which was presented in January, was presented on time.
Mr. Chair, question?
Senator.
I remember that we had some degree of discussion about the report at the time. When ODOT presented, and it was largely a finding of what ODOT had done. My curiosity is whether or not in this streamlining there is going to be any opportunity for any other input. Connect Oregon is a much beloved process for funding non-highway modes of transportation, and I didn't know whether or not the report given at Ledge Days was the definitive word on the streamlining, or whether or not there was going to be any kind of process, assuming Connect is funded again, to talk about better, smarter ways to do it.
Mr. Chairman,
there you go.
Senator, there's no reason we couldn't have a future meeting where we could bring them back. This committee is the perfect body to have that conversation in the future. It's not in the statute that report is required, but this committee could certainly request that.
Absolutely. Well, I would certainly like to do that because I think the conversation about Connect Oregon is not yet concluded. If all Section 85 does is to indicate the receipt of the report, that's fine. But I think we could benefit from some additional conversation about Connect, its sustainability, sources of funds, whether or not there's adequate geographic distribution, whether there should be. The list goes on and on and on.
I think
Chair Beyer.
Representative.
Senator, what I might suggest, and I'm glad you're here, Director, that maybe at our first interim legislative meeting that we bring ODOT back and go through with a fine-tooth comb, make sure that people are comfortable with the process. Recall that we have requested another appropriation of lottery dollars, $50 million request that went in right after the long session ended, to try and recoup funds for Connect Oregon, because we had a concern that that pot has been depleted. And so we won't know the outcome of that until the gavel comes down on this session. But it would make sense to me that right after that happens, that we bring this subject back to the fore in our first interim legislation.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I think very quickly, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, again, for the record, Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Senator Johnson broaches a legitimate issue. And as Patrick indicated, the scope of that section was streamlining the application submission. But to the senator's point, the construct of the program has changed, which will require a rulemaking process that will allow us to flay open the process to see if there's streamlining opportunities as we go through really the project selection, who we touch, where we touch, the distribution, as you say. So we'll get to it soon.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Are you ready for the next one, Mr. Chair?
Go to the next one.
Patrick, if you would go
let's close. We're okay with that?
Oh. apologies. So I'm working off of a consolidated set of notes and questions we just want to raise and put on the record. Patrick, if you would go to the your cheat sheet, page 10, bottom section, section 100, sync due date for remitting use and tax excise tax information. If you could just explain its corresponding part in 4059 for members. I think we're changing.
Sorry, what was the section number, Senator?
Section 12 of 4059, Madam Chair.
Section 12, okay. In the new bill.
If I may.
The Department of Revenue request.
Yeah, so it is a request by the Department of Revenue. This is designed to sync the time, the point at which consumer paid vehicle use tax and bicycle excise taxes are due. The bill specified they'd be due on the 20th of the month following the date of purchase, but that does not align with DMV's due date for title and registration application, which is 30 days from the date of purchase. If I recall correctly from this, Department of Revenue has actually recommended making an additional modification to this as well, because essentially this is designed to not duplicate or to not double the workload for people that are supposed to be doing these making these reports. This particular section is designed to sync up reports that are already made with the reports that will now have to be made to Department of Revenue under the privilege tax and the bicycle excise tax is what the purpose of this is.
And
I believe it's language that is still in process.
Yeah. Right. So there's no determination on this one because we're waiting for a report.
Well, but I mean, the end result is going to be essentially to, for lack of a better word, streamline this as well. So that it's designed to make the program that you created in House Bill 2017 work in the most efficient way possible.
Thank you.
Way down the weeds and Department of Revenue stuff at this point.
So. Are they still here?
I haven't got to it yet, I don't think. What number are you with?
10.
10, page 10. Page 10, if you would please, Patrick. And page 10.
So just a section number would be?
Section 89, sub 5.
Okay. Definition of bicycle.
Definition of bicycles. What did we come to the conclusion on that? Is that in the technical fix bill or is that a policy issue?
Oh, okay, so we're talking in this omnibus document, and I don't even see it.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator, that entire block of questions is not yet determined.
Okay, so let's just go on. Can we try, Madam?
There is a solution that I believe is coalescing, but it's not there yet. We will probably talk about that on Monday, Mr. Chair.
So we're just going through your notes from the Senate side of Mary. You would, Mr. Chair, page 11, if you just flip over your next page there of your ominous document, if you want to use his. The question arose on, we just did definition of new vehicle. I stand corrected. We did that one. If you go on to page 13 in the ominous document, that's your ominous document you created. Why don't you just use Senator Byers' version there? We have it all marked up, and we can tell you what to do then.
You're working off a different set than I.
This is your document working off.
Just section number is what I.
Section 100, syncing the due date for remitting excise tax.
I think we just talked about that.
We just talked about that. Yeah.
13. And then.
I know where I'm at.
Okay. I think if you go back to sections 48 and 49, this is cap for EV charge ahead program, and then that is the only one that is in theory in this technical fix bill somewhere.
Those are technical fixes that have not yet made it into, and I can explain. So we're talking, so 48 and 49 are references to Hey, give me that section number again. I didn't get
section 48 and 49.
Why am I not?
One I'm standing correct. 148, 149.
148, 149.
There we go.
There we go. That's the problem.
Thank you.
I stand corrected, all right? For those in the audience, you don't know, the committee members have like six different versions of the document here, so we're... And your note said that this section 148, 149 cap for EV and charger head rebates was in House Bill 4059.
There we go.
And that, of course, not might be accurate either, so...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that amendment is not in either a bill at this point.
Okay, so the answer to the question, colleagues, is that will come later. Okay?
Like that one for... Lengthy discussion.
Okay. Well, this will be that topic will be a topic of discussion next Wednesday.
I'm just cross-referencing your work here, Patrick, right? Checking. You also mentioned that Section 150 charge ahead program was going to be in 4059, but I'm guessing it's not in 4059. That's a topic of discussion next week, too.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay, so explanation will come next week. Okay. I am guessing section 150 on page 20 of that document, if you flip over, definition of high emission passenger motor vehicles is coming next week too. Is this
yeah, the, and that is actually in House Bill 4060.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so that's in House Bill 4060.
And it will be, we'll be discussing that next Wednesday as well.
Okay, 4060. Let me just make sure we, on our side, don't have any other questions. No, Mr. Chair, I have exhausted the list of questions from all the committee members on our side.
All righty.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have something they want to talk about in the 4059 bill?
I'm taking notes and listening right now, and then I might have something, but it's kind of
gonna have public action 4059.
So this is okay, so we're done with 59, is that what you're saying?
We're done with 4059 with the exception of those items that were pulled out, and we will put them on the list. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good to go? All righty, then we will open a public hearing. We'll close on 4059, and we'll open a public hearing on 4060. And I believe we're going to start out with accountability sections 1-4 of the bill. Patrick?
Oh, so Mr. Chair, so this 4060 is what's considered the policy options. There are technical fixed pieces that are in here, but it's mostly policy options related to House Bill 2017. House Bill 2017, yes, from last session. And tonight we've split, like you indicated, we split all of the different topical areas into three different meetings. Tonight's meeting will be dealing with the accountability sections, as well as the highway funding and project allocation sections, and the jurisdictional transfer sections. For the most part, I do not believe that everybody who signed up has signed up on those specific, indicated which specific issues they're doing. So I would recommend maybe bringing them up in panels and dealing with them as they're brought up by your witnesses, Mr. Chair.
So you want to bring everybody up first?
I would think that'd be the easiest.
All righty, let's do it then. What we got here, Mr. Campbell, John, and Jarvis.
Yeah, just those two.
Just
Mr. Chair.
Those two. Trucks and cars.
One of us looks different than the other.
The payees.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA. I'm not going to say which states because that caused me trouble earlier today. But I'm here to talk about two particular issues in House Bill 4060. The first one is Section 2nd that was the long-range 20-year itemized project plan. The draft as presented eliminates the language that has that 20-year plan. That was important for three particular reasons. One, it actually envisioned having a 20-year plan where we were looking at specifics about what kind of projects we would need to make sure that the transportation system as a whole was being taken care of. That then provided the two other reasons for that. The first is you would then be able to know when you needed to come back and ask the legislature for another tax increase, because you would know you wouldn't have sufficient resources to address the projects that were necessary to make sure the transportation system was running properly. And then two, when the legislature did take that issue up, instead of having to try and figure out what projects you need to be funding with this money you were asking for, there would already be a plan in place that identified what those projects were that needed to be done. So our recommendation is that that language be restored to the bill. The language now essentially says you come up with some general guidelines as to how you spend the money in the future. We do that now. That's not sufficient from our perspective. We really need to have a long-term 20-year approach to doing this. The second issue is under Section 14, and that's the allocation of fund change. And here's really the issue with that. If you change the way the funds are allocated to be spent, and for those of you who are interested in looking specifically, this is on page 12 of the bill. You have to now
give us a minute to catch up with you.
Top of page 12.
Mr. Campbell, step back.
Yes.
The first item that you were discussing was in section...
I'm sorry, this is section two. You'll find that on page two. The important language really exists
under
the bottom of the page, beginning on line 40 and going to the next page, page 3, down through line 9.
Thank you. We're shuffling an awful lot of
paper. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't be pushing you through that before you can get to where you're going.
Thank you.
There was some comment about using the resources reasonably expected to be available. That's just so that you don't end up coming up with a 20-year project plan where you say, let's pretend we had $500 billion and see what we would use. It really needs to be constrained by what is reasonable. Now I'll go to section 14, and again, that's on page 12. It also is on page 13. It's the change from the deleted language to the bolded language on page 12 between lines 29 to line 35. The reason this is problematic is when you change how the money is spent, now you have to go through the cost allocation process again to determine whether you allocated taxes on cars and trucks properly. Now, you might get lucky and it comes out exactly the same as the other formula. What's actually more likely to be the case is that either you will have overcharged cars or you will overcharge trucks, and then you have a choice. You get to either increase the taxes on the other, which is a supermajority vote that you'd have to go through on this bill, or you would have to reduce taxes on the other, which means that some of the people in the back of this room who are expecting to have money for projects would not have as much money available. So our recommendation is you just leave this the way this is and not reallocate according to this. Plus, it would also probably make Mr. Malik happy not to have to go through the rather arduous process of running this through the cost allocation process.
Are there questions for Mr. Campbell on these? Yes, Representative
McClain. I want to go back to the first one. You're looking at lines 41 through, I guess, 2 or 3 on the next page?
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, it's actually beginning on line 40. And it goes through to line 9 on the second page. That's
line
a little
nine.
Over-inclusive because it's the deleted language that exists beginning on line 43 and goes through line 45, and then the language that's deleted the next page from line 3 to line 5.
Okay, thank you. But I want to have you please summarize what you think you get with that deleted language, because I didn't hear that summary.
Oh, I'm sorry. What that would do is it would require that there would be a plan in place where ODOT would look at what projects are necessary over the next 20 years to make sure the transportation system, inclusive transportation system, needs in order to stay operative. If you take that requirement away, you're not doing that for 20 years. You're not identifying what projects are needed over the next 20 years. Now, they might have some sub-plans that identify when they need to do a bridge overlay or not. But that should be part of a comprehensive plan so the legislature knows going down into the future what is necessary resource-wise, and when you do assign resources, what you're going to get for that money when you do it.
I understood all that. I don't agree with you that we don't have that there without that language. I mean, we have a strategic 20-year plan.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean,
well, through the statewide transportation projects. Through, excuse me? Mm.
You're talking about the State Transportation Improvement Plan.
Yes.
The State Transportation Improvement Plan only has projects that are currently funded.
Yes.
It used to have a thing called a tail,
yes,
which told you what you would do if you had more money. But it doesn't do that anymore. And this is a project that essentially creates a 20-year stip, for lack of a better term. And it identifies what those projects would be going forward for 20 years.
Well, that's
follow-up.
I think that's interesting. And I'm just thinking, I guess I've been working on autonomous vehicles for too many months here. But, I mean, to think about what that plan looks like with the kind of technological changes and a lot of the other things that are going to be different than 2018, you know, I mean, I think there's, I'm not sure I agree with you on that, I guess. But my biggest concern is, you know, what do we really get? And I agree, I love comprehensive plans, I love strategies, I love planning in general. But I want it to be real.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, one of the clearest examples is we know the bridges in Oregon have a certain life.
Sure.
So we know that when the life of that bridge is over, we should know when that bridge needs to be replaced,
sure,
when it needs to be resurfaced, when the highway needs to be resurfaced. And that's going to come up several times within a plan like this.
Exactly.
But that's why we need to have it, so we can see comprehensively. If anyone could tell me what needs to happen along those lines in 14 or 15 years, then we would know whether or not we need to do a transportation funding plan or package in 5 years or 6 years or 10 years or 20 years so that we can make sure that those are funded. That's our point on that. And this was part of the work of the accountability group.
I think what you've said is interesting. I want to think about it.
Can I just spin off on that? I appreciate that, what you just asked. So, Craig, how often do you think federal government comes in and all of a sudden asks us, what's a big plan that you're working on that's 10 years out from now that we mm-hmm. can start helping funding with right now?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, I don't know if they ever really do that. On occasion, they will say, we have money that's available if you have a shovel-ready project right now. And if we're ready for that, then we can apply for it. I would imagine the folks at ODOT would be in a much better position than me to answer that particular question. But I don't recall any historical examples of where the federal government has paid much attention to what we need in 10 or 15 years.
So can I follow up with that question?
Certainly.
Under what the proposed language is right now in the bill, how far out do you see this going?
Madam Chair, Representative, if you're referring to the language that is currently in the bill replacing the other,
yes,
those are basically guideline plans that say when we need to expend money, we'll use these plans to determine how that money should be spent, as opposed to being a plan that identifies what specific projects would be put in place.
Sir Boquist, you know, I'm just kind of thinking that, you know, you kind of stepped up to the plate about a year ago or so and had some projects that you put together that kind of helped out for us. And that's what a lot drove where we were going with the accountability piece on 20 years out.
I'll let Senator Johnson speak first.
Okay.
I'll just tell you, you can have all the discussion you want on that side. This ain't happening on our side.
Okay.
Senator Johnson.
I agree with Mr. Campbell, and I would point out that the FAA provides 90-10 funding for aviation projects, and there have been instances in my memory where there was either remitted or remainder money, and to have a backlog of projects that were more concrete than amorphous would be very helpful. I would hate to leave that lovely FAA money, Federal Aviation Administration money, on the table. And so I'm very supportive of the idea that we would have these more durable plans. Also, in my experience, I think that you referred to them as sub-plans are done by ODOT all the time. Having them amalgamated doesn't seem to me to be onerous, given that the work is, in some cases, already done.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, it was really for us more a question of why this particular language was taken out of the bill, and that we didn't really understand why that was the case.
I recall that came from the accountability work group that you were fully participatory in, and I recall the discussion then as supporting this notion of long-term planning.
Well, I'd be happy to speak if you want me to.
Senator Boquist, please.
The language, of course, as in the OLUS, you know, even people in Nevada probably read occasionally before the lobbyists can come in. I only did that out of jest, Mr. Campbell. We sparred this morning in another committee hearing, Madam Co-Chair, so he's still ouching.
I understand.
For those of you who don't recall, the three co-chairs were invited, foursome were invited to OTC at the beginning of this fun adventure project here almost 2 years ago now. And I, of course, drew the short straw to ask some questions, sort of like I'm drawing the short straw tonight to go through notes from our side, what's the 20-year plan? The statute says you have this long-range plan, and it turned just for, I guess, politeness to a lively discussion between the Oregon Transportation Commission members about not having the authority to do a long-range plan, and it wasn't their responsibility. And I believe it was Commissioner O'Halloran at one point finally raised a copy of the Oregon Revised Statute and says, it says right here we're supposed to have this plan. And that, of course, led to several of those documents that came before the committee. So when we started down this road, we said, okay, now that you have a plan, why don't you at least start identifying over a 20-year period, if that's the easiest to use, and say, this is, as exactly Mr. Campbell said, 8 years from now, we're going to have to repave this road, 12 years, we're going to have to repave this road, and have a plan in front of us so that when they come to us, rather than just the STIP, come to us and say, let's have a downstairs conference and everybody bid for projects, this is the real list of projects that we need to do over the next 20 years. That's how we got to where we were. How it got asked to be taken out, if you recall, is ODOT wanted to take it out. I can assure you at this time, excluding one member who has not expressed his opinion, the other four members of their side is we're going to have a 20-year plan. Now, if we want to tweak how they do the 20-year plan or how they coordinate it with Aviation Report, I would just tell you that the vast majority of us on this side are in favor of Mr. Campbell's retention. So we can continue to go on for quite a while, but that's where we are.
Any other comments?
It's against
Representative McLean.
It's against my good thinking down here, but what you just said, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, that it's important to have a 20-year plan. I think that the definition and the sideboards on the 20-year plan and what it means and how you update and or change that 20-year plan are not small details. And I think that in some ways, some of the things that you said, maybe if you have a 20-year plan, did have a 20-year plan, and it wasn't carried out, it was because you don't have those sideboards. So I don't think this is a small issue. I don't disagree with having one, but I think we have to pay attention to the words if that's the case. And I think what the words were that are bolded, that I guess are new, that came in, as you say, from ODOT, gave you the opportunity to have that conversation, or could have that conversation, or had time to have more thoughtful ways of looking at what the sideboards might be. I don't think that just having it there, those words that I see that are in small letters that have been taken out, do the job.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Boquist, Senator Boquist.
I don't think the speaker's like that. The president doesn't, so I don't think she will. I fully agree with the representative, and I think what we need to do, and just to be, the bold is not part of this section discussion. The bold has something else to do that was put in for another reason we're going to come back to later. But I think I am perfectly comfortable with telling the department you need to come back in the long session with a plan of how you're going to do this, if you can't resource it, how you do it, and what exactly the sideboards you need. Mm-hmm. Not in favor of just repealing it, just like we did in JTA, and turning around and ignoring it for the next 20 years. Because we here have the task of defending this thing for 8 years and 8 series of increases going forward. So I think I'm of the opinion, I completely agree with you. I just think, and I think much of the comments that I have in front of me say, okay, ODOT needs to come back with a plan, not just we can't do it. And that we can't do in the next 20 days. So I think what we're pitching is, let's just leave it in, have it flagged, make them come back to us, and note that we need to have a much wider discussion of this amongst ourselves as we move into the next long session.
Mm-hmm. Senator.
I would just make the comment, in looking at the omnibus list, the ominous list that Mr. Brennan provided, the comment in this long-range plan section that we're talking about indicates, and I think this is ODOT's commentary, we have no source of funds to pay for aviation plans or port plans. Mm-hmm. The FAA very generously participates in planning documents for airports, and the ports have been under considerable rigor recently to create business plans. Some of the more sophisticated ports have very long-range plans that are quite comprehensive and complex and involve a lot of money. I would submit that some of the smaller ports need this level of discipline because some of the smaller ports have gotten themselves into significant trouble absent disciplined planning documents. I will avoid the temptation to name names, but there are none that are on the South Coast represented by Representative McCune.
Thank you, Senator. And, Senator, on that note, I would also I draw attention to the fact that for those of you who don't know, and most of you in this audience are very well versed on all of this stuff, but we have different jurisdictions that oversee ports and aviation than ODOT on highways. So that was another part of the conversation, that they come from different jurisdictions. So Biz Oregon is a piece of it, and the Department of Aviation is a piece of it. So it's kind of it's disparate a bit, which I think created some concern, I guess. Any other comments on this section? Mr. Campbell, were you exhausted?
Madam Chair, I am done with my two issues.
Yeah. I would like to draw, I am remiss in not recognizing that Representative Noble has joined us tonight. Representative Noble, would you like to come up and sit at the dais with us?
If it's all right, I'm comfortable here.
You sit wherever you are the most comfortable. We're just delighted you're here and have an interest in what we're talking about. So thank you. We appreciate you being here. Also, we have our OTC chair, Commissioner Bainey, is also here. So thank you for joining us as well. We're delighted to have you here. Did I miss anybody?
Do you know where those numbers came?
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
I just would also point out that in the issue of 40-40-20, that's the issue of dividing up the projects that was raised by Mr. Campbell. I don't think philosophically many people disagree with, you know, that conceptual idea. However, there is no appetite for an 18 and 36 vote, and so therefore somebody needs to come up with a better way to do this, because I once again point out that on our side, we would like to see a better plan and not generate a tax vote. And that's the 40-40-20, and I think I can even speak for Senator Beyer that until we get to the next session when we have real changes we have to issue, so we would be, I think most members on our side would be in agreement with the fact that, as AAA points out, let's leave the existing percentages in there, come back with a better plan in the long session.
I would look to my colleagues to see if they have comments. So, Representative Lively.
Thank you. And so remind me again why, I'm trying to understand the change to the what we originally had in the bill to those percentages.
The changes in here is requested by ODOT.
Right, but I'm trying to understand.
I mean, I can't explain that. I can only explain it if you change it.
I think what I'd like to do is call up Director Garrett and find that there right. obviously was some rationale behind right. this. It might be helpful if he explained this. So, Mr. Campbell, thank you. And I think this is an important conversation.
I do too.
And I think it is important to note that there is the possibility that this could trigger a 3/5 vote. So we want to be very careful how we tread here.
I think, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matt Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation, is correct that we offered that up because we thought it was consistent with the investment strategy that the commission provided this committee or the previous committee in its opening salvo in 2017. So aligning with that, just being intellectually honest, we think this is what was reported in that investment strategy that did speak to bridges, that did speak to pavements. Mm-hmm. And then we started to get a little more, as we're looking at those 20 years, again, getting to another topic here, but the previous topic, becomes a little softer, a little fuzzier as we move out when we talk safety. You can go out so far, but the reach of 20 years becomes problematic. And then how we coordinate with the boards and commissions of aviation, of Business Oregon. So, again, that was all part of it. But it's the continuity and the consistency of our transportation commissions that Chair Bainey and Commissioner O'Halloran shared with the 17 committee.
And, of course, we appreciate their good work. I think we all are aware that there are policy and politics involved. So I think being conscious of what the potential is for this to create a challenge for us is important as well.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, if I may, notwithstanding the mechanics of it, I certainly understand that, and I think there's a future conversation on this. Let's do that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the director?
Good.
All right. Moving on. Ms. Jarvis, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. I will be very brief because I have supplied you with some written testimony, and you can see that I echo Mr. Campbell's concerns about Section 14 in the testimony that I have provided. So I just have a couple of other quick things to mention to you. They shouldn't be controversial issues, but if you look in Sections 10, 11, 12, and 13, and I can't tell you what pages because I don't have it all with
page 10.
So these sections repeal fees for a variety of the permits that we are required to get from ODOT. And the fee increases in House Bill 2017 were inadvertent. We had, when we had come to the table to work on this, asked for our costs to be all contained in the weight mile tax increases, but this got put in inadvertently, so we're asking to have that repealed. And then in Section 9, there's a placeholder to correct the truck tax rates because there were some that were in error. And we would ask that you allow us to do that. We don't need it for this current biennium, but it would be acceptable to us to correct these rates effective January 1, 2020, 2022, and 2024. And that shouldn't change the administrative burden on the industry or the department. So just prospectively. So those are my comments.
Questions for Ms. Jarvis. Representative McLean.
I want to understand why were they not correct? Are you just saying that it's a Scribner's error, or are you saying that the formula itself?
I could feel that one.
Okay.
Senator Boquist.
We recognized the mistake and we ran out of time.
And we did.
And we actually mentioned this in the final committee that there were technical errors. And we started preparing the list. This was one of those that you could say a Scribner's error, but it was an overworked error where we had too many lawyers working fast and they just missed several pages.
So can I just follow that up just for a minute? Because, you know, I think we just made this decision 6 months ago, and I'm not interested in really going back and putting a lot of different policy in it right now. So I just want to make sure that it truly was just something they missed or something that, you know, we didn't pay attention to or something. But it's not changing the formula, nor is it changing the rate to a different percentage or anything of that nature.
No, Madam Co-Chair, Representative, no. We did identify it. We literally ran out of time, and it was one of those at the end of the session when the co-chair signed the letter transmitting the bill to OT to OT or Oregon Transportation Commission, and copying it said, "Okay, hey, there's errors here. We already know it." Mm-hmm. And obviously, given the vote, most people didn't want to go back and reconsider this second time on the floor. So that's literally what happened, and we did our best to brief the committee at the time. It doesn't change it. It's just a shifting, and it's just a Scribner's error.
Okay.
But it's a significant, it looks significant when you put it on paper.
Okay. So. Welcome back.
Thank you. Where are we?
Do you want to do this for Chair Byers, just quickly where we were so he understands what just happened?
Was this the shifting of the weight mile to
Section 10, 11, and sections.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
And 13.
Did we decide we could do that?
Yeah.
All righty, so it looks like next.
These two.
Yeah, Nelly.
It's
Kelly, excuse me, Kelly. All right. Kelly Menke, McMinnville, and Dave Hockenbar?
Dave Hockenbar.
I was close.
It's pronounced anyway, Senator.
My apologies for not doing well on your name. Welcome.
Thank you. good evening, co-chairs Byer and McEwen, and co-chairs Boquist and Olson, and members of the Joint Transportation Committee. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. My name is Kelly Menke. I am the McMinnville City Council President, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit before Dave does here. I'm also a member of the Yamhill County Parkway Committee and have been for a while. McMinnville has been very active in the Yamhill County Parkway Committee and the bypass since its inception. We've sent members from our department heads, the engineers, to the council, to the parkway meetings, and members of our city leaders have gone. And I've been a part of the Parkway Committee off and on for the last 7 years. And indeed, our mayors are. In addition, with the phase one, the McMinnville contributed over $3 million as a part of the matching to get the passage of the money for the bill. Thank you so much. Sorry. We're already seeing benefits from the bypass. Excuse me. The long-anticipated opening on January 1st has already provided much better traffic flow through Newburgh and Dundee. About 700 trucks a day, we figure, are bypassing them and going around it, so their city streets are much more usable and better for the city themselves. Reports from McMinnville, the motorists are finding that it's much easier to get to McMinnville, and it's much easier for us to get to the airport. People that commute to and from McMinnville, commuting into Portland, really appreciate having less traffic in the Dundee area. The congestion has greatly improved, although we believe this is going to be a temporary situation. And we are acutely aware that the temporary connectors from Phase 1 to 99W are just that, temporary. Traffic engineers predicted that the Springbrook connection in Newburgh would fail almost immediately. And we're also concerned about seeing, congestion happen in Dundee within the next few months. Excuse me. I bring this up to highlight that while Phase 1 has made great progress in addressing our region's congestion, we must remain steadfast in our efforts to forward Phase 2. We are grateful, very grateful, for the efforts of this committee in passing the transportation package that provides funding for the final design and engineering of Phase 2, which codifies the state's commitment to completing this major infrastructure project. This rural infrastructure project. As you fine-tune the legislation this session and consider small ways to improve its success, we would encourage you to support some small but important changes to House Bill 4060. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Dave Hogberg to elaborate.
Thank you. And while you do that, colleagues, I believe she's referring to page 15 of the bill.
Project list.
Yeah.
Please begin, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair McCowan, Beyer, co-chairs Boquist, Olson, and the committee. My name is Dave Hogberg. I chair the Yamhill County Bypass Parkway Committee and have for almost 30 years. So I can tell you that it has been an incredibly long and valuable project. And I wanted to send to you the greetings and the thanks of the Yamhill County Parkway Committee. We had an extraordinary event when the bypass phase one opened. And on behalf of the Parkway Committee and on behalf of Newburgh, Dundee, McMinnville, Yamhill County, the Confederated Tribes, and in fact on behalf of an entire grateful region, we send our appreciation and thanks for this incredible partnership over all these years that has opened that first phase. And I say that with great humiliation and respect for the incredible job all of you have done on behalf of House Bill 2017, the JTA Act. And so I want to talk a minute about the House Bill 2017 and the bills you're now looking at this evening, and to tell you that as a result of House Bill 2017, we immediately began as a committee and as a group to work towards acquiring additional funding. As you recall, in 2017, there's $22 million, and in that bill it says it's for design only. And we have been working very hard, and particularly at the federal level, and looking for ways to leverage the investment that you've made for that next phase, for phase two, and how we can play upon and use those dollars to move the project forward. One of the things that we know is that we also have some dollars in the STIP for to also begin to acquire right-of-way. Thank you for Project Savings for a great job that ODOT did in saving and building the first phase for considerably less than it was projected. So those dollars have gone into phase two. So one of the things we've run into is a bit of an anomaly. In the House Bill 2017, the dollars, the $22 million, is for design only. The Transportation Commission, in putting it into the STIP, talks about it being for shovel-ready preparation. And what House Bill 4060 in Section 16, and you'll find it on page 15, does is it aligns the language in the bill, in the legislation, with that of the Transportation Commission, which really makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, you've got design only, but we're already in the STIP for funding for right-of-way, and it just makes a much more fluid one. And it has some significant advantages from a federal funding standpoint in that the federal funding, whether it's whichever of their programs, they look at shovel-ready projects. And to have it designated as a shovel-ready commitment is significantly beneficial for us in the way that we can leverage your dollars and federal dollars to move this part forward. So what we've asked for is that and we support Section 16 of 4060, which would make that, in fact, an accomplishment. We also would point out that one of the things that's important is that we know that the federal administration is looking at a major transportation bill. It has a fairly heavy emphasis on rural projects, and so we also think that with this language, we are in a better position to go after those major rural transportation infrastructure projects, which is one more way that this major project, which is already approved from all of its standpoints of environmental and land use, it gives us an advantage for moving it forward on federal rural project dollars, which we can take advantage of. So that's the first question that we were talking about on this fix. And I will tell you that I have submitted written testimony, and you'll have it on there, but I thought a better opportunity to give you a little more background. And the second one is that in Section 45 of House Bill 2017, under 2.6D, it lists a number of projects which ODOT would be required, projects in excess of $20 million. The transportation projects, highway projects, are listed in there that have to be reported on back to the legislature by 2022. And those are the $20 million-plus projects. But it doesn't include the Newburgh-Dundee project. And it is a major, ready-to-go infrastructure project in a rural project. And what we're suggesting is that while you won't find it in House Bill 4060, we're suggesting that you add to House Bill 4060 language that would include the Newburgh-Dundee bypass as one of those reporting projects. And we think that can be very helpful. We think it sends the right message to the federal delegation and to Congress about how important this project is, and that it is as important as a rural infrastructure project to have that same level of critical importance placed on it by the Oregon legislature. And that would be helpful in achieving that leveraging of funds. So that's kind of an explanation. Chair Barr.
Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Chair, just to clarify, so you're asking two things. One is already in the bill, and it's changing design only to shovel ready in Section 6.
It would be Section 16,
Section 16L.
16 sub 2, sub B, sub L.
Sub L, L. Yeah. Okay. But beyond that, you'd like us to add the project to a reportable?
A list of,
yes,
a list of reportable projects.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
But let Boquist go first.
Senator Boquist.
And just to clarify, so for committee members, we understand and to make sure we're tracking here, Patrick, this is the both of these, the language that the witness just mentioned, is these are two of the issues that we have issues still outstanding on your email. Is that not correct? And you possess the language, the request for these two languages, right?
Correct, Madam Chair, okay. Chair, Senator. If I can clarify this, so the language in the section that they're referring to refers to design, construction, financial status, and projects, progress of projects costing more than $20 million, of which this is one of those. And then the language in the bill says that are identified in this act, including but not limited to the I-205 Abernethy Bridge Project, I-205 Freeway Widening Project, and 217. So obviously, including but not limited to does include this, would encompass this, but they're recommending that you call that project out specifically by name.
To seek out federal funding.
Yeah.
Because of the funding issue. Excuse me, Chair.
So we have the language, as you indicated, for that.
My concern is an equity issue. I want to make sure that we are not providing a precedent here to have every other community that thinks they have significant projects to now ask to be place named. And I just would like some reassurance either from the chairs or from the staff that we are, I know Newburgh-Dundee is unique. It's half done. But I'm just cautious that we not pave the way for all other communities to come in and want their projects in the bill.
Chair.
In a, some different way.
Representative.
Yes, Chair Beyer, I might defer to staff to comment on this to see if there is an issue in doing this. I'm not clear as to why the ones that are in there are already there. I guess there, it would be helpful for me to know.
Representative, they're on the list. The staff's on the list here after two other people. So okay. Let's take note of that. Thank and you can address them when you come up.
Okay.
More? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's see. Mr. Honeyman and Miss Baldwin. That's Gwen. Lobbying is harder than we thought it was.
Contact sport.
Should have seen the other guy. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Honeyman, Legislative Director for the League of Oregon Cities. I'm here this evening to talk about Section 3 of House Bill 4060. I have previously submitted formal testimony and attached to it several documents for your consideration. The League represents all 241 cities in the state of Oregon, 166 of which, to provide some context for my remarks, are considered small cities, populations of less than 5,000, which are located throughout the state of Oregon. Attached as Exhibit A is a list of those cities indexed by population. I appear before you this evening in support of the inclusion of Section 3 in House Bill 4060. I'm going to abbreviate my formal remarks in the interest of time. Section 12, Sub 2B of House Bill 2017 requires the Oregon Transportation Commission through ODOT to create a website that, among other things, includes information from all cities in Oregon to report on the sources and uses of funds dedicated to transportation projects. The difficulty with that requirement is that is the contradiction that it creates with existing statute, that being ORS 3366.790. This section of Oregon statute, which I have also included in my testimony as Exhibit B, and which long preceded the passage of House Bill 2017, is a requirement that cities report transportation receipt and expenditures, and I'll explain how they do that in a moment. Subsection 5 of that statute exempts cities with populations under 5,000 from having to comply with this reporting requirement, hence the contradiction between the existing statute and the legislation that you passed last session, and therefore I submit the need for Section 3 of House Bill 4060. one more piece of background. I said I'd explain to you how the prior statute is complied with. ODOT, with the assistance of the League of Oregon Cities, currently conducts what is called on an annual basis a local road and street finance questionnaire. The purpose of this questionnaire is twofold. One is to comply with FHWA, Federal Highway Administration requirements pursuant to their preparation of annual reports essential to their policy and program development, and also to provide a template for city compliance with the aforementioned ORS 366-790. If you look, and I've included as attachment or Exhibit C a copy of that questionnaire, it's fairly detailed, and I think by any measure, I think you would agree that upon review of that questionnaire, it elicits a comprehensive set of data on revenue receipts and for roads and streets throughout the state, disbursements for the same, and debt information for street and road bonding activity. All of this on an individual city-by-city basis for Oregon's largest municipalities, where most of the state's local transportation monies are dispersed and spent. So you see, most of the of what the legislature called for in terms of accountability in House Bill 2017, I'd submit, is already in place and has been for some time. However, in closing, let me acknowledge the work, the hard work that went into creating accountability standards in House Bill 2017, especially the work of the accountability work group led by Representative Olson and participated in by several others on this committee. And I hope that my comments this evening are not construed by any means to be an effort to avoid that accountability, but rather to acknowledge the following. One, the need to address technical conflict in the language between House Bill 2017 relative to ORS 366.790. The accountability, also to acknowledge the accountability and data that the legislature is calling for in House Bill 2017 is already provided, but may need to be reformatted for website presentation as called for in the bill you passed last year, and that also that small cities have heretofore have never been required to provide this level of detailed information. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony and attempt to answer any questions you might have. Thank you for the opportunity.
Mr. Turnerman, thank you for your testimony. What's the response rate from the cities on the required data?
Close to 100%, if not 100%. Now, I will not kid you, the role of the League of Oregon Cities often is to kick some hind end to get them to respond. Some are a little slow to take part.
Thank you for your candor.
Anybody else? Okay. Gwen?
Chairs Byron McEwen, Vice Chairs Olson and Boquist, Gwen Baldwin here, and members of the Joint Committee. Gwen Baldwin here today representing the City of Beaverton. Since this is the hearing where accountability issues are being addressed, I wanted to touch briefly on an issue that, while not requiring action this session, is still important to resolve going forward. As you may recall, Section 45, subsections 2AG and 3AG require the Oregon Transportation Commission to report various compliance actions related to local jurisdictions and ORS 279.305, also known as least cost analysis in public contracting. They have to do this in order for the 2022 and 2024 statewide gas tax increases to happen as it's currently written. And I think that there are two main problems that I'm hoping we can work through going forward. First, a Parks Bureau in Ontario or a water division in Douglas County could derail the entire statewide gas tax increase over a dispute that doesn't have anything to do with transportation. Second, the triggers inhibit the ability of a local jurisdiction to bond against future gas tax dollars, restricting a tool that's used to make efficient and effective public infrastructure investments. If there are conditions on that revenue, if there's a second approval or additional approval needed, a city or a county can't bond revenues. Even if the gas tax increase is intended only to apply to a non-compliant jurisdiction, the entire gas tax increase is still conditional and can't be bonded. In addition, bonds must be sold for a specific project. And given the size and complexity of most transportation projects likely to be bonded, this would take a couple of years lead time. So 2022 is not that far away. I do appreciate that the committee is addressing several issues with great immediacy this session, and I look forward to continuing the work on this issue going forward.
Senator Borkowitz.
The city of Beaverton came and visited me, and while we're not in agreement, we are in agreement of this. They have actually raised a couple key issues that I don't think we thought about. So I would just say there is no solution in the 40-60, but I was not aware of some of the activities of cities, and I know we never had these discussions with the bonding experts at ODOT, nor with Laura Lockwood McCall in Treasurer's office. And so she's raised some I guess nitinoid issues that really do need to be addressed. They're down in the weeds.
It's a good word.
Is that really down in the weeds?
Okay? In the dictionary.
Okay. Nitinoid. And so I would just encourage you know, though I'm opposed to anything right now. She has raised a couple bonding issues that none of us had ever. It's a totally new question that had never come about before in anybody's deal. But I do also take the opportunity, Mr. Co-Chair, to go back and thank the League of Oregon Cities, because I'm perfectly fine, and I can tell you that at least on our side, we're perfectly fine with changing the threshold. But I just want to remind everybody, and I appreciate the spirit of the city of Beaverton, that we're in this for 8 years. The reason this is tiered out in front of us was in order to get votes, and we all have to work together and find solutions to everybody's problem that is in this for the next 8 years. Other than that, somebody outside of this room can very easily ruin this whole thing, especially now on the ballot. So I want to thank the League of Oregon Cities, even thank the city of Beaverton, who is looking out at its small neighbors. And I have cities in my district now who are saying, hey, we're looking at the small cities now and making sure they're doing things right, because we want to make sure we help them. And the league has been very aggressive at doing that, as Mr. Sherman has pointed out. And I do want to express the thanks to both the city of Beaverton and to the league for doing that, and then recognize the fact that they have raised an issue that nobody ever thought about. So we have to come back to that.
Co-Chair McKibben.
Ms. Baldwin, thank you for raising the issue. Again, this is a complex piece of work, and there are unintended consequences, and I think Senator Boquist characterized the fact that this is just one of those things that we didn't get in front of us. Since this is out in the future a little ways, I might suggest that we put a pin in this, work on it in the interim, and we actually have time to dig into it. It's a more complicated issue than some of the others that we're dealing with, so with your indulgence, I would like to suggest that we do that.
Of course, ready to work with you, always.
And then we can give it our undivided attention after the session ends. Mr. Honeyman, that is looking very painfully familiar to me, unfortunately. So I'll bet you're ready to go home for the evening.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good.
Thank you for being here tonight, and I appreciate your input on the small cities issue. I think it's a great solution, and we appreciate your good work.
Other questions?
Been there, done that.
And thank you very much. Matt and Paul. I don't think we're getting any farther than tonight than beyond public hearing. So whatever you wanted to talk about, plus the answers to the rest.
Fair enough, Mr. Chairman. I'll start this off again for the record. Matt Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I am going to speak about Section 1. Page 1, lines 22 through 25, and that is...
Sir, which bill?
4060. Yeah, just 4060. And this is where we seek modification of language for OTC membership. And if you read, beginning on line 22, it says, a member may not have direct or indirect financial or fiduciary interest related to commission's duties. We would ask and have asked to remove the words indirect and fiduciary. Well, the question is, why would we do that? We believe this language, as it's currently written, is broad, and implementing these stringent requirements will likely make recruitment of knowledgeable, qualified, and committed OTC members more challenging at a time when I think we need a very high caliber of individuals to complement the members that we have. As change occurs, the terms direct and indirect financial fiduciary interest are not defined in the bill, and a plain meaning reading of these terms, I would suggest, prohibits the appointment of an OTC member if that member has any financial or fiduciary interest in any transportation program in the state. Now, given that the OTC duties are broad in nature and include a general power that allows them to take any action to coordinate or administer programs related to highway, motor carriers, motor vehicles, public transit, transportation safety, and other programs related to transportation. Again, we're of the belief that this will prompt a prudent member to refrain from deliberating and voting on the potentially wide range of transportation issues that come before the commission. We believe that may slow the commission actions and could result in having at times no unconflicted members available to take action on some matters. So we think it is restrictive, ambiguous, and we would ask that the words indirect and fiduciary be stricken.
Speak to the fiduciary. I understand the indirect, but why are you hung up on that?
In consultations, Mr. Chairman, we come to the following definitions. This is consultation with our counsel and with ODOT professionals. So as we look at fiduciary, we would argue that a direct fiduciary interest relating to a commission's duty appears to mean that the commission's action would directly affect a person or an entity that the member had a direct fiduciary duty to, whether or not it affected the member financially. So if they were representing someone, that fiduciary, that trust responsibility would apply to those folks, nothing to do with financials. So that's the direct. Literally, I could find no one that could define indirect fiduciary interest. So those were the two issues that I thought that term fiduciary became ambiguous and problematic.
I'm just trying to understand this, and I want to be very careful about not speaking about people, but as broadly as you talk about this, this would be any elected person?
We believe so. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Because there would be potential benefit to an entity that they represent.
How about a lawyer who represents clients who maybe have an interest in a shopping center near an exchange?
Chair Beyer, Senator Johnson, we believe that would be the case as well.
Let me ask you then, on the flip side of that, would it not be reassuring to Oregonians to not have a lawyer with a client looking for advantage from OTC?
Well, Madam Chair, I think what Oregonians want is there's a fair and just adjudication of the issues that come before the Transportation Commission, that no one is benefiting who sit on the panel or not. So a fair adjudication, very straightforward here. My biggest concern is not the integrity of the individuals. Again, we have honorable people sitting up there, and we can only attract honorable people. That's certainly an attribute that I think we would certainly advise. But that said, I'm concerned about the mechanics in terms of just what I would term a chilling effect with ambiguous terms, not knowing exactly what they can vote on or what they can deliberate on. Because, again, if you read the language, they're asked to declare conflict and then recuse themselves from deliberation.
Under existing laws, I'm
that's correct.
Under existing ethics.
This read seems so narrow, though, and I'm just quizzical whether two lawyers would come to the same conclusion. You've obviously talked to your legal counsel at DOJ. But my question is, would this go so far as to say if I'm a sawmill owner and my log trucks drive on a bypass in pick a city, that I would have to recuse myself?
I think Senator Johnson, the ambiguity surrounding indirect financial and fiduciary interest, you could extend the argument out there. That's the conversations we have had.
Well, that seems almost ad absurdum, but
that's one we may want to have a discussion with legislative council. I get it. I understand your concern, Senator Boquist.
And just to remind at least the co-chairs, we alerted legislative council to pay attention to what he was saying, because I think we all recognize that it needs to either be defined or something needs to be changed. And Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, we did have asked them to look at that, and I would have hopefully they would have reached out to your council on your side to say, oh, how do we define it, or if we repeal it, how do we fix this language?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boquist, there has been conversation between councils. And just to be direct, the language would be intentional. And I'll leave it at that, because I think, as using Mr. Brennan's word, solutions are blessing. But it would be very direct and intentional and call issues out in plain language.
Okay. Representative Olson.
So, thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to throw this out here. I don't know, Matt, if you're going to be the one to answer this, but, and Betsy, you might be, Senator Johnson, you might be a good one to chip in on this. Of the chairs that we interviewed last year, former chairs and everything, I guess there could be an argument that they were kind of moving things on for self-interest. But, at the same time, I'm thinking, does not the OTC itself have a kind of a self-management issue for conflict within them for dealing with that? So you'd kind of prevent any of that. I don't know. I get where you're wanting to go, but I'm just not sure that that's what I want to do.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, there's no four-corner document. There may be a self-policing activity that plays itself out amongst the commission colleagues, but there's no four-corner document that speaks to that. So what we now have is specific language that we're having to deal with, and then trying to understand the mechanics of moving significant decisions with significant financial impact, and just continue to move the machine forward here. This is compromising that, we believe.
Yeah, more.
Well, I got to tell you, I just think this is a lost opportunity, is what I think it is, for leadership. Whether it's an elected person or not that's in that position, it's a lost opportunity if we go down this path. I'd like to have experience there that leads the OTC or any of the members that are on OTC. But I'm after. I think that that's what we want.
I'm not entirely clear what you're saying.
I'm not either.
Oh, you know, okay. Well, okay. So I think Senator Johnson kind of asked and addressed the question about, well, would this imply that it would be toward an elected official? What's wrong with that if you have someone that has the quality of leadership and the experience that you'd want to run or be in part of OTC? You're missing if you all of a sudden exclude them out of this. That's how I think.
But excuse me, Mr. Chair, but in the sand, that's why we want to work with the indirect and the fiduciary to take it out, so that we don't do that? I guess I'm confused, and I thought that's what we're suggesting, so we don't do that. That we make it so it can be exclusive and people can serve, isn't it?
Right.
Senator Johnson?
I guess I'm misunderstanding that.
Mr. Director, what was in statute before House Bill?
Really, nothing was spoken to this, to be very honest with you.
Okay, and one other thing, colleagues, just this conversation has caused me to think about it. We're all hung up on the direct financial or fiduciary, and I think in looking at the word fiduciary, we're perhaps reading money interest. I'm interested in, I'm going to take an absurd example. We end up with a nominee who is a paid staff person on a not-for-profit organization that has a bias towards not wanting to move petroleum products on our state highways. I think what we're trying to accomplish is fair and impartial people who are not motivated by money or ideology to serve on the OTC.
Correct.
And I don't know how you inoculate against that. That's my point.
I would remind the council that any appointment to the OTC has to be confirmed. by the Senate,
and
which is
sometimes we make boo-boos.
Well, sometimes we don't do it well, but.
Chair Beyer, I think I want to go back to, not back to, I'd like to touch on what the qualifications are that are listed in the recruitment and confirmation process that the governor's office goes through, because that's kind of where all this starts and what the definitions are there. We're trying to build something in. There's already a process there, which I'm not that familiar with for this particular position. But I think your point is very well taken, Senator, that does have to go through a confirmation process. Are we inadvertently hamstringing a process here going in a direction we don't want to go? And I think this is a really good conversation to have, because this is very important. But there's a process in place. It does have a confirmation, and maybe we're overthinking it.
Representative McLean?
You're looking at the clock. I was feeling the same way, because I think we're all tired. This is a big deal in some ways, yeah. Because I think there should be some coordination, because we have two parties here that are going to be involved, or three, and that is who's recruiting, who's appointing, and then after we've appointed, you know, how do we deal with perception as well as reality? But I think there's definitional issues. I don't know if the best thing is to take those two words out, if those two words are wrong, we need to put in other words besides those two words that at least gives us a direction of what we say we want as far as the expertise on this particular panel.
But and impartiality.
And impartiality.
Well, looking at, we're already 5 minutes beyond our scheduled time. I wonder if this, clearly we need to look at this some more. Mm-hmm. Your pleasure, would you like to highlight the others or just come back at the next meeting and hit them?
Mr. Chairman, I defer to you.
He just says, I think Paula just going to talk about one section.
Why don't you go ahead, Paul?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator. I'll be very brief. I got one issue down pretty far down in the weeds. I'm on House Bill 4060, Section 17. In the original House Bill 2017, Section 71L requires ODOT to quarterly report on revenue and expenditures related to the bill. We're asking in this House Bill 4060, Section 17, to change that quarterly to twice a year to line up with our state revenue forecast. The revenue portion of it we're not asking to change. We can still report on the revenue, but it's the expenditure piece. The expenditure piece gets us down a road where we're chasing every penny and every project in an accounting system that basically we've got another set of books. So what we're suggesting is to change expenditures to allocation. So you see the work that we do with our commission and what the commission approves. You see the allocation and make sure it's aligned with your direction and bill.
Is that the way the commission gets reports?
Mr. Chair, they get reports obviously on the STIP when they approve those, so the allocation, and they do see expenditures in a broad sense. See expenditures down at the project level. We have those available. We can, you know, give those to them. What we don't part that I think what gets confusing for us, most of our projects have multiple funding sources, and so they'll get a little piece of federal money, a little piece of state money, a little piece of this or that, and trying to parse out just the piece of state money that came from House Bill 2017 begins to be a very tedious exercise for us.
I think where we were trying to go with that is, you know, bringing this new committee up was we wanted to be in a position to get whenever we met, like you reported to the Business and Transportation Committee, get a quarterly report on the update on the projects. And I think it was mainly trying to say, where are you at in terms of the project? Are you likely to do a cost overrun or underrun or whatever,
right,
construction? That's really what we were trying to say. So,
yeah, and Mr. Chair, I think this accomplishes that in a much more streamlined approach than what the expenditure is.
I think 46 cents.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. We're trying to get you to tell us, are we on target or are we not on target?
Right.
The weeds, you can have your weeds.
Yeah.
So we can drag you in every
I could agree with Mr.
Every quarter, but you can do the finances twice a year.
Yes. I think Mr. Mathers made his case.
All righty, folks, we're 10 over. I apologize for that. It's the good thing is we have about 3 to 4 weeks to finish this work, and it'll probably take us that with some of these. Again, as you're looking at these, if you have questions that you want to make sure we deal with, we'll do with Patrick. I think we're still on the first three items.
Oh, yeah, we covered everything we were supposed to cover tonight, Mr.
Chair. Oh, we did.
Yep. Damn, you're goodly.
We did.
Damn. Look at you go, Mr. Chair.
More often
what an organization you run, Patrick. We are adjourned.